può dire che
Hey everyone, welcome to the show tonight. We've got Tag on again. We did a show a while back, and honestly, it was so long ago. I know we talked about like 10 different things. I don't honestly remember what we talked about, but it was a really fun show. So I think this is going to be fantastic as well. I think last time we had, we did a couple, right? We had one with All American Prepper, and then one with Grumpy Acres, and yeah. So at any rate, for my, we're streaming on both channels, but for my listeners, when I play this, the audio podcast version of this, explain to everybody what you're all about, where you are, where they can find you, and all that good stuff.
Yeah, sure. Well, first, thanks for having me on. It's good to see you again. And by the way, your intro is really cool.
I appreciate that.
I don't know how you do that. I wish I could learn how to do that. But anyway, I'm Tag from the YouTube channel Life Done Free. I'm an off-grid homesteader living in the right smack in the middle of the Midwest. I also run the social media platform freesteading.com and the alternative energy company Grid Down. And so we're just living off grid, doing it our way, you know?
So you do all that as well as homestead?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, do you sleep?
a little here, a little there. Actually, people ask me that all the time because I'm always, I mean, today I started another barn. And so we're working on getting that up. But so I do business a couple days a week, and then I'm at the homestead the rest of the time.
Gotcha. Very cool. Very cool. Like the title says, we're going to talk about some. Last week I had a guy on who's in Ukraine. His name is Nikos. Great guy. And I wanted to sort of expand on that a little bit about what some of the realistic expectations, if something like that were to happen here in the United States, and if something like that is even possible here in the United States, or what it would look like, and the threats we face, you know, is it something like that that's more of a threat, or is it something from within that we should be concerned about? So I suppose, and then if we get time towards the end, I'm going to try to make time for this. Tag's got a financial background, so we'll talk a little bit about investing in preparedness, gold and silver, all sorts of different stuff. But I've seen a few times the last, especially today, and I don't know if this is the red car effect where if you see a red car, you're looking for a red car, you're going to see 100 of them. But I've seen today a few people talking about the calm before the storm. And I'm curious your thoughts on that, because I don't know that it's necessarily calm, right. But there's definitely a storm. What are your thoughts? Is this a sort of a calm before the storm type moment, or is it a more of a perpetual calm before the storm?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't describe it as calm at all. I mean, you know, They've been eroding the nuclear family in our society for many, 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 many years. And it's just culminating more and more and more to where there's really not a lot of options left on the table for them, right? And, you know, they talk about how as a society collapses, that the laws become more absurd and that the things become more absurd. For example, putting litter boxes in classrooms, right? And so I don't think it's a calm at all. I would argue that this is just more and more and more and more and more until eventually it's going to get to this breaking point, and then we're all in for it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that sort of, you know, I feel exactly the same way, because you look at what's going on at the border and who is it that's coming across on the border, whether that be, you know, Chinese, Latin American, whatever it is. There is an absolute flood. The floodgates have been opened, and it begs the question of how intentional and why this is happening, other than to change the demographics of the United States. But that's sort of where I am with the whole, is it more concerning the things that are going on within, or should we be concerned? We were chatting a little bit in the beginning before the show that something is building, something is moving this way. I don't know when it's going to be. You were mentioning, you know, World War III seems pretty inevitable. Mm-hmm. And I tend to agree with that. Again, who knows when? But it seems like, and maybe you get your thoughts on this, it seems like to me that it would benefit, if things are going so bad here in the United States, where they, behind the scenes, they understand that we're at a breaking point, wouldn't that be something that would either deflect attention or give them the excuse to completely break things down and rebuild it.
Yeah, well, I mean, they can't get rid of the petrodollar if they don't first collapse it. They can't get rid of America's might if they don't first collapse it. They can't get rid of our standing in the world if they don't first collapse it. I mean, this is just, this is, I mean, 101, right? I mean, you're not going to do any of those things. And, you know, they talk about Agenda 21, 30, all of these different things. But the fact of the matter is you can't bring the bottom up without bringing the top down if we're all supposed to be equal, right? Common core. And so I think it's absolutely on purpose. I think it is absolutely 100% in purpose. And I think it started many, 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 many years ago. You talked about World War III, and it is inevitable, in my opinion. And I've thought, spent much time thinking about this. And at the end of the day, the America's status in the world is waning and it's declining. And I don't think that NATO and America can afford to let Ukraine lose. Because if they do, the dominoes begin to fall. I think they know this.
The flip
that is I don't think Vladimir Putin will back down. And I think China and Russia and Iran and our enemies out there in the world today know we're weaker today than we have ever been. And anybody who's read any of the Art of War books, I mean, you know, any of these kind of things will tell you, you always attack your enemy at its weakest.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the way I see it.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's sort of like two sides to that, I think, because you think about how we could be prolonging this because it weakens Russia and things like that. But at the same time, the billions of dollars we're throwing at that is weakening us. And you've got China sitting on the sidelines, which I go back and forth on how big of a threat they actually are, or, you know, or, you know, is it all smoke and mirrors and all that? But at the same time, and I talked about the southern border. They could, you know, be sending troops, you know, through or fighting aged men, maybe not troops, but fighting aged men, something like that, planning behind the scenes for all the stuff that you were just talking about, because we, NATO and the United States and Russia, everybody's becoming weaker, but except for maybe China. And I know their financial system is wonky and all that, but Iran is getting stronger, you know, as much as they can. North Korea is launching rockets all the damn time. So it is almost like that sort of old school Axis and Allies type situation forming. I mean, and the pieces are there. It's just, are they going to, you know, come together? And I think if it does, if something does come to a head, like you were talking about, how there's neither side wants to step down. Putin certainly is not going to.
No.
And with NATO, I don't think they, I don't see that either. Although it would be, I think, a little bit easier to fracture the whole NATO thing than one guy. But so, you know, I tend to agree. And I think there's, you know, like I said earlier, a little bit something almost like intentional about the whole thing. Like they know this is where it's going, and you've got the military industrial complex and all that. They know this is where it's going. It's just a matter of time and how they can, you know, put their chess pieces in place for this to go down.
The American military complex want it to go there. They want it to go here because this is the only way we're going to hide all the stuff going on at home.
Yeah. Yeah.
They want to go to war. Because if they go to war, maybe they can get the economy booming again. Maybe these things can happen, and it'll be a huge distraction to Epstein Island, to all of the craziness that's gone on in our world. I think it's the ultimate distraction, and I think they want it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, when you think about politicians and how they, you know, more so than I ever remember, completely disregard the American people. It is no longer about us whatsoever. The middle class, even the, you know, lower class, unless you're up there in the high class, and then you're okay. But it is no longer about us. So when it reaches that boiling point, what a better way to stomp all that down, distract everybody with, or maybe things get so expensive that we can't afford to live, and then people start getting pissed off, and you know the uprising starts. What a better way to squash that and you know, distract people than with something big like that. Then it's like, hey, this is why everything is so expensive. We're fighting for your freedom. We're doing this for you. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Bunch of BS.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you though, but I don't really think that an invasion of mainland United States is likely in any way. And I could give you lots of reasons why. You know, that you could talk about the Chinese military, who they have more boats, but most of their boats are diesel powered and their range is very, very small. You could talk about, you know, the declining population pyramid in all of these countries. You could talk about, you know, the number of aircraft carriers they have. And we go through all these things. But here's the thing. We are the only country in the world that teaches our kids to hate our country.
Yeah.
They don't have to come here. They can use, you know, fifth, sixth generation warfare. They can hit us economically. They can EMP us. They can do all of these other things. They never have to put a boot here. And half of America will take it with a thundering applause and say, yes, this is wonderful.
Yeah.
Because we're the only country in the world that teaches our kids to hate our country.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's it didn't used to be like that 20 years ago.
No.
a completely different state. As state of mind for the American people 20, 30, 40 years ago than it is today. Almost like we feel guilty, not us, most Americans feel guilty for being American. And it's ridiculous.
Yeah. China can shut us down with an email.
Yeah.
100% fact.
Well, and you think, I mean, who knows how much they actually control as far as the financial markets and media and things like that. They absolutely could. That's where I was going to kind of go with this as well, is last week I was talking to Nikos about the situation in Ukraine where you have fighting forces on the ground, boots on the ground, and how the people are dealing with that situation. And there's sort of two parts of this, the part about them helping each other out and what we would need to do in some sort of crisis. And also the other part with, is that feasible? And I tend to agree with you. I think there are things they could do. They could come over. I mean, if they're pushing people across the border to, you could set up cyber attacks. You could do, strategic points and disrupt the system. As far as them sending squadrons and you know, taking over the streets, I just don't see that happening. Even though, like you were talking about, a lot of people hate America, there's still a lot of us that don't. Right. So it would be very tough. Now, somebody in the chat, and I was going to pull it up, but I missed it, but they were talking about how Russia is only 53 miles away, something like that, up in Alaska, which is very true. But at the same time, it would be we're sort of, I guess, sheltered. I mean, throughout it, that's why we've been able to expand the way we have, because we don't have borders. We got Canada. We got Mexico. Those two aren't going to attack us anytime soon. I mean, maybe Trudeau's got some stuff up his sleeve. You never know with that buffoon, but we don't have to necessarily worry about that. So I just don't see, I think it would be more of a something nuclear, although I don't necessarily see that either, because if they were going to attack the United States, they'd want to be able to take it and do something with it, right? Not just pummel it to the ground. I think it was Jammer talking about it earlier. I was talking about if China were to do something like that, they wouldn't want to destroy everything. They'd want to be able to come over here, get establish something here. I just don't know that that's very likely. And that's part of that realistic thing with prepping and with preparedness in general, is being realistic about that and not worrying about things that really are out of your control, things that we probably could handle. I'm more concerned about the inside out of what they're doing, how they're sort of destroying the middle class. Yeah. And basically making it, with the immigration and all this stuff, you've got the very low, you got the very high. Us in the middle is slowly going away. And I think it's all, going according to plan.
Oh, of course. I mean, the best thing in their mind, the best thing we could do is become more and more compliant, move into the cities, rent, don't own anything, right? You'll own nothing and you'll be happy. I mean, I think that's absolutely the goal.
Yeah. And that goes into that new, we were talking about the intentionality of all this stuff. That could be the new sort of system. This is, the old system is broken now. We can't do this anymore. So this is how we're going to have to do things. People are going to have to be more dependent on the buffoons that are up there. And we're going to have to, this is just the way the economy is going to work. Otherwise, it's not going to work at all. And when you look at the idiots that are in charge, or the idiots that are on TV, the idiots that are in charge, we don't really see
the circus,
right? But the idiots that are in charge, like this debate last night, I didn't even watch it, but I know that's a joke. That's the state we're in as Americans. That's our choices right there. That the bunch of idiots on stage right there. Those are the people running the show.
Yeah. When I think that's, if we're talking about fear and the things we should be concerned about, I think that should be number one on the list.
Yeah. Yeah.
At the end of the day, the supply chain it would take to get Chinese to actually do a conventional invasion here, it's just not likely. But you can do it inside out, like you're talking about. And, you know, the restrictions and the, you know, the ESGs and the Great Reset and all of these things that they once said was, you know, tinfoil hat. Now they talk about on mainstream media every single day, you know. That's what I worry about the most right there. And, you know, how many things do we have to ask for permission every single day? You ask permission every time you pay your electric bill. You ask permission every time you pay your mortgage. You ask permission every time you pay for anything that you become dependent upon. And then any of those things we can ask permission for are one thing they can just say, you know what, tag, I heard what you said about, you know, Mr. Joe Biden last week, and you don't get no power this week. Yeah. That's where I think we're headed.
Yeah. And with their ability to surveil and the ease that they can do it and the ease of propaganda and, you know, talking people into things and telling people what they want to hear. You don't even have to tell the truth anymore these days. If the right person says it, it's the truth, depending on which side of the fence you're on.
What a shame.
Yeah, yeah, it is. If you say anything bad about Ukraine, you're a Russian apologist. If you say anything good about Ukraine, you're, you know, I got to bite my tongue here, but you're on the other side of the fence and all of that. And it's just none of it. It's all games, I think. And granted, their game is far more serious than our game. But they it's like a cat, a laser pointer to a cat. They push us where they want us to go. They make us pay attention to the things that we need to pay attention to. And then, you know, get us pissed off one side or the other. And meanwhile, they're playing their games, they're doing their things, and they're setting up their chessboard for what's to come. As far as, say we do get in some sort of a large crisis type situation, maybe not a boots on the ground type situation, but the economy before, because I don't know that it would be, it's not going to be like you listen to some of these prepper YouTube channels. It's not going to be something that's going to all of a sudden you wake up tomorrow and World War III has started. There are going to be things that lead up to it that are sort of catalysts, small little events that end up that we'll be able to see that, okay, it's going. And some of them are already happening. Some of them have already happened. So it could be, or our economy. I don't see just completely tanking at one time. It's going to be something that is slowly going down, which it has been for the last 2 years. So when talking about a real crisis SHTF type situation, I was talking to Nikos last week, and he was talking about how people in Ukraine sort of work together, help each other out. That's what they have to do because the, you know, the supply lines aren't what they used to be. Now, granted, other countries are sending in aid, and that aid is sort of getting to other people. But how do you, what are some things that, you know, just the average person, I know you've got yourself, or that's what you're working towards. You've got yourself set up pretty well to handle a situation like that, which in my opinion is one of the more likely type situations, more than nukes or anything like that. I think the, you know, that inside out type stuff. So what are some things people can work on? I mean, I'm getting there, but for those people that really don't have that option, what are some things as far as neighborhoods, say suburbs, people working together, all of that, what are some things they can do if they can't quite homestead like you are?
Yeah, well, I don't think you have to homestead. I mean, I think you can be safe in the city, and, you know, a lot of people will tell you can't, but I think you can. I think it comes down to community, and I think it comes down to getting with enough like-minded people. Because even me, you know, I live on a nice big farm and all that, but guys, I can't defend this by myself. There's no way. I got to sleep, and then I got to work, you know, and you got to do those things. So, I mean, I think the first advice I would always give people is yoke up, find community, find people like you. And, you know, we can get into how you find them or, you know, any of those things, but that'd be the first thing that I would do. And then I would also go a step further to say, where are your vulnerabilities? You have to understand where you're at on the chessboard. You and I were talking about this earlier, right? So, like, for example, I'm off grid. So they can't come after my power, right? Because they just can't. I own it. It's on my property. They can't come get it. So that's not a vulnerability to me. So I think it's about understanding your vulnerabilities. If you're living in an apartment, make sure you have alternative sources of energy, which I think are huge, right? Water, same thing. I mean, I think it's about just understand where you're at on the board. Yoke up, find community. And I think it's, I don't really think it's that complicated.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there's part of that too, is it doesn't necessarily mean have a prepping group right now. You gotta get this formalized group of 20, 30 people and make sure you have the food stockpiled and all things like that. I think just communicating with your neighbors, being cordial with your neighbors, because if something does happen, if things start to decline like that, you're going to start creating bigger bonds with people, and people are going to start depending on each other more and more. And then when it does get to something large, you are going to have that because you can't do it alone. And I think that's what the people of Ukraine, sort of how they live. Maybe they've lived like that before and they're just used to it. Whereas Americans, I think it would be a more of a culture shock. A lot of Americans, because most Americans just want to be left alone. Don't even look at their neighbors, staring at their phone and all that stuff. So,
yeah, I think people look at community. Most people look at it wrong, at least in my view. And you know, they look at it in a singular sense, meaning, you know, I've got to go. We're all going to Bobby's house. We're going to, you know, load up in Susie's, you know, off-road Jeep with my year's worth of food and 2,000 rounds of ammunition. And we're off to take on the zombie apocalypse. And I don't really think that's how it is. You know, I have a big community that surrounds me, and I get emails all the time about, hey, what are the rules? Well, don't be a jerk. There's all the rules.
Yeah.
There's no more rules. That's it. Don't be a jerk. And yet I have people all around me who we get together. You know, my last video I put out, we built a guy a house. We all showed up and built a house. And so I don't think it has to be this formal standard operating procedure, SOP. I don't think it needs to be all that. Just find people who are like-minded and, you know, go get involved. Go do something together. Go to a park. Just start those relationships because in the end, you're going to need them.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Hey, Amber, happy to find you live. Absolutely. I think before I pulled that comment, I had a perfect response to what you were saying, and now I'm drawing a blank. But it is, because you think about a situation that is when you depend on people, you're going to need them for certain things, and everybody's going to grow into that type of stuff. It's not Hollywood. It's not like the Book of Eli, right? With Denzel Washington running around blind as a bat and just, you know, sumo chopping everybody and doing all that stuff. Not going to happen like that. The more realistic scenario is going to be maybe that slow burn that we're going to have to deal with. We think it's bad now. Just wait type situation where it is more authoritarianism. It is more the supplies are shorter. And the community aspect is going to be more important. So it's going to be it's not going to be a quick thing. It's going to be a thing where your neighborhood or whoever you built those bonds with, maybe you do start talking more about ammunition, defenses, and things like that because you see it coming.
Well, those things are all important. And you know, I'm a prepper first. So I was a prepper for 20 years before I became a homesteader. And so I thought when I built my house, I thought security first, or, you know, I mean, so those things are all super important. I just don't think that no matter what you store, if you can't take care of those other things, you're just never going to do it alone. I mean, I was a soldier and I've been a deployed soldier. The amount of time you can stand watch and be effective is limited.
Yeah.
I mean, it just is. And so I'm not discounting bullets and band-aids and those things because I have those things. Those things are super important. But a community I would put clean at the top of the list because, you know, not everybody owns a salt mine, bud, and not everybody owns a sugar plantation, and not everybody owns a, you know, a sawmill, and not everybody, and there's these things that I think by yoking up, we can make it easier and create. You know, I talk about this on my channel a lot about we don't have to fight them. We have to ignore them. And what I mean by that is, you know, if we can find ways to do for ourselves outside of the system, you're lessening your vulnerabilities. You know, we talk about prepping, and it's interesting. I've gone through this huge prepping journey where it started with one can of meat years, 25 years ago, long, long time ago. And then it got to a point where I had this huge storage of food. But now the more I think about it, I spend more of my time prepping now on how do I lessen the vulnerabilities the system has over me? Because I think it's our biggest threat. So I look at prepping as this huge multidimensional thing now versus the singular hopping in a Jeep, grabbing my ammo, getting my food, and I'm bugging out of here.
Yeah. You're exactly what can't happen. You're the exact person that they do not.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Yeah. Hey, Amber brought up a good point here. Let me pull this comment up. She said, I think the silent majority will carry those who are lost through what to do, a new leadership foundation will grow. I think there's sort of two parts of that. I think there is that aspect of, yes, there are a lot of people that aren't, they don't think about the things we think about on a daily basis at sometimes, but there, as they go through this, people will wake up and there are going to be people that are receptive and willing to do what it takes. Granted, you do have the turds out there. I call them the 10% of people who are just going to be turds no matter what. You are going to have those people out there, but a lot of people will come on board, and you've sort of got to be a little bit receptive to that. And that's that double-edged sword of operational security and being open about preparedness. And, I'm not going to give anybody advice and say one way or the other, because I think it really depends on your situation and what you do. And there are certain things that I won't talk about and certain things that I probably talk too much about, but there is that point where you're going to have to open up at some point, because you're not going to be able to do it alone. All the food you have only going to last so long, all that stuff. So, yeah. And if you're alone, you're a target. So how long is that food really going to last? Your supply of food may last you 3 days.
I think I would ask everybody, if you're waiting for a reason to stand up, what are you waiting for?
Yeah. Yeah.
What are you waiting for? What are we hiding from? This is our country. Right. And it's we, the people. And I'm not talking about any type of violence, because I would be stay way away from that. What I'm talking about is take care of yourself, take responsibility for yourself, take responsibility for your needs, quit the dependency on that stuff, and you'll come out of it way better and way more empowered. And, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, if my internet went off tomorrow, it's okay. I'm going on with my life. You know, yeah. it's just not that big a deal. And I think to her point too, which I think was really important, part of me is excited about all of this. I know this is going to sound totally deranged, but I think that maybe through all of this, I don't even do any research into the Tytler cycle, but the Tytler cycle is basically, if anyone hasn't looked at it, T-Y-L-T-E-R, it talks about how civilizations form and then how they eventually fall apart. But anyway, because we're at the end of that cycle, strong men are coming, right? Strong society's coming.
Yeah.
And we might be able to, through all of this, to have some wonderful things rise out of it and fix a lot of the problems. Now, it's going to be a huge shit sandwich along the way, and we're going to have to deal with that sandwich, which is why I'm so 100% committed to breaking the stroke that the system has on me. But I think there's some great things coming up, and I think there's reasons to be excited about how we get to live through that history.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just a matter of, I think of it like sort of like an alcoholic or a crackhead, somebody addicted to something. That is what I forget who I said this to, but I was like, Americans are crackheads. We are crackheads. We are addicted to the lifestyles we have. And this could go further than just America, all westernized countries. And we are addicted to the lifestyles we have. We're addicted to the fast food. We're addicted to the television, the entertainment, the bread and circus. We're addicted to all these things. So to give that up sounds easy when somebody like you says it, or when somebody like me is trying to get to that point that is motivated to try to get as far along that path as I can. It sounds easy, but for a lot of people, it's, and I see this in preparedness all the time with people that will join the Bug Out Location, the Preparedness Academy, watch videos, do things like that. A few months later, MIA, totally gone. And I think it's easy to say, easy to talk about, easy to do. Just like, I'm going to quit drinking today, not drinking anymore. Right. Doing it is a whole different story, but you will come out the other end. I used to be a big lush. I know what I'm talking about. Yeah. You will come out the other end much better off, much clearer headed, and be ready for if something like this, or when something like this does come down the line. It's just a matter of choice. You're in charge of your life about how it goes and all of that. So if you're not willing to do it, you can have all the food you want. You can make yourself feel better. Yep. About having all the prepping gadgets and all that stuff. But if you're not doing the right things, and this sort of goes into the mental preparedness stuff, if you're not doing the right things to put yourself in a position to succeed in a situation like that, it's a crapshoot, I guess. And your odds aren't very good.
Yeah. You know, I want to tell you something you said earlier I wanted to get back to touch on real quick. I just want to tell you a real quick story for your listeners, because I think it just matters. I had an uncle who once told me that I was the weird one. And this was years ago. And man, you're an odd guy, man. And because I've been like this a long after, as soon as I got out of the Army, I've pretty much been this since 93. I've been this way. And so he always say, man, you're the weird one. And, you know, why do you worry about all these things? And blah, blah. I'm like, I don't worry about them. They inspire me. Actually, I use them as motivation, you know. But anyway, he's like, you're the weird one. You're the weird one. You're the weird one. And then right as COVID ended, or the, I guess, ended. Does it ever end? Right. Because here comes the next one. But anyway.
Yeah.
Man. Towards the end, he came to me and he said, you know, you might be the smartest person I know. And, you know, and I only bring the story up because I wanted to remind everybody who's listening that my first thought when he said that to me is, man, I'm sure glad I didn't call him stupid back then.
Yeah. Yeah. Right?
And everybody's
like, I told you so thing.
Yeah. And isn't it our job to help people through that journey, regardless of where they're at? And I think you touched on that. And I think it's just really important that everybody's at a different place. And if we can come together and we can help people and encourage them instead of creating divide, which is what they want us to do, instead of looking at Republican versus Democrat or black versus white or whatever it is, whatever it is, come together as a people. There are many of us and few of them. Fact.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a tricky situation sometimes too, because you don't want to push too much, but at the same time, you want to be able to give them that opportunity to come, you know, to at least take a step in the right direction, do whatever they want, but you don't want to be so pushy, especially, you know, talking about homesteading is probably a little bit easier than talking about actual prepping, because in prepping, you're talking about military stuff, nuclear bombs, things like that. So people tend to go, oh, no, I'm not talking about that. That's some scary crap. I don't even want to listen to you. Yeah. Whereas homesteading, people can sort of visualize themselves in that situation until they actually have to do it, put some work in, and then they're like, okay, I'm going to go buy my TV dinner and I'm sitting down at the TV and I'm going to watch a homesteading show. I'm going to watch Little House on the Prairie.
Yeah, I know, it's interesting you talk about that freedom. The ability to be free in your own life is very, 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 very hard, because you got all these systems out there that are there to pick you up and support you. You know how many people are behind the light switch that turns on, or behind the faucet that, you know, turns on, or behind your food systems? There's millions of people out there to ensure you get the things that you want. When you do those things for yourself, it is not for the lighthearted. I get up very early every single day. I work very late every single day.
Oh, yeah.
And if you're not willing to do that, don't even do it. I'm telling you, don't even do it, because you'll fail.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, I can only imagine, because I am probably a tenth of the way you are, or a tenth of the amount of things that you need to do. And I could not imagine all the things you mentioned in the beginning of the show, right? I could not imagine having to do the things that I do right now that are, you know, for the internet and for the website and all that stuff, and do the things that you need to do and have the time to do all that stuff. It is just... you know, something that just, I would have to figure out my priorities and, you know, go that route. It would be tough, but again, not everybody has to go to the level that you are. I think there, if you can't do do you grow a majority? I'm sure you do a majority of what you guys eat, right?
Yeah. So every year is different. I mean, we attempt to grow it all. We've never gotten to 100%. There's some years I can get to about 70, because we have cows and pigs and sheep and chickens and turkeys and geese and fish. I have a big pond full of fish. We have a huge garden. But this year we had some things that didn't really produce very good. So I bet you this year we got to 40% from a vegetable perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. Just different. Yeah. And I think that's how people need to look at it. If you can go that route, then, you know, work on that. If you can't, then maybe it is that food storage. Maybe you do need to have that, because when things start to get a little worse, you want at least some backup.
I do.
But again, if you're talking about something super long term, where prices are going to be skyrocketed through the roof and the economy is 10 times 3, 4 years, 5 years. And then the government is just being completely unruly, and who knows what all of that brings. You're going to have to figure out how to get through that. And this all goes back to community, right? Where people are going to have to start working together and figure out the whole bartering thing, figure out how they are going to get things done, because the good old ways of relying on the people on top to do for you and to help you out and to be there for you when you need it. Kind of like the people in Hawaii, how the government was there for them.
Oh yeah.
Those good old days are going to be gone, and you're going to have to figure that stuff out. And again, I think people will fall into that. they will, you know, gradually say, okay, this is what I've got to do. If I don't do this, I'm going to be one of the bad guys. I'm going to be one of the people going and stealing stuff. And they're going to be out there too.
Yeah. You know, I think I would add to that, that the art to being a great homesteader is twofold. One is being a good manager. And the other thing I think is it's how well do you jump from hurdle to hurdle to hurdle? You know, I'm so excited I get to come on the show today with you because I get to talk prepping, which I don't get to do a lot. And, you know, prepping has changed so much for me. And there's some things I no longer prep for. I no longer prep because I grow them or I raise them. So I'm storing that on the hoof or energy. I'm storing it in the tree. Like I just look at it differently. But then there's other things that I'm in no danger of producing my own salt. I'm in no danger of producing my own wheat. It takes too much for one homestead to go produce enough wheat to make enough bread for the year. It's just not possible. And so all I did is shift my attention. Now what I'm storing for food are the things I cannot create. The rest I'm storing in the dirt on a seed, on a hoof, or in a tree. But yeah. I'm prepping just as hard as I ever have. I look at it differently now.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's interesting. And that's how all societies sort of form, right? It's the group of a few people going out west, and then, you know, the town starts to form. Then you need a doctor. Then you need a general store. Then you need some ranchers and people that are growing things. That's, you know, the same type of principle we're talking about, just on a more localized scale and not I don't see a completely starting over from scratch type situation because the powers that be want to be, and whether it's them or somebody else, there's always going to be somebody that wants to make the rules and make the decision. So they're not giving up the United States. It's not going to be like Mad Max.
No, I don't see that either, but I do think the worst depression or whatever you want to call it, you know, is headed full bore towards us. And I think World War III is headed full bore towards us, but I think how it affects us is it just makes us more and more of a slave. And we've got to figure out how to resist that pressure to be that more and more of a slave. And you can do it. You can do it anywhere you live. You don't have to have 40 acres like me. You don't have to go and you don't have to do any of those things. You can do it anywhere. It's got to be important to you. You got to decide that is what you want. You want to decide you don't want to be a slave. You got to decide you're willing to do the things it takes not to be one.
Yeah.
That's it.
And that goes to what you were talking about earlier with more people standing up and speaking out. Because if you don't, and it's going to take a whole lot for a lot of people to get to that point. But if there was enough people right now speaking out about that, they wouldn't be doing the things that they're doing. But there aren't enough people.
That's right.
Because it's comfort. Why upset the apple cart? My life is, it's good. I go to work. I come home. I pay the mortgage. I do this. I do that. I live the quote unquote American dream. Which is completely different than it used to be 100 years ago. But
yeah, it's amazing to me that they've gotten us convinced that the American dream is we should work 40 years for a company, at which time during that 40 years, we're going to change the house that we live in 8 times. And because we changed it 8 times, the amount of money we're going to spend, we'll never own it. We're going to work for this company for 40 years, to which at the end, they're going to give us a gold watch and tell us to piss off. We're going to go on Social Security for 5 years, to which such time we're going to a nursing home. And through a Medicare spend down, they're going to take all of our assets anyway. And we left this world as broke as we entered it. And that's the American dream. There's got to be something better than that. But yeah. I'm not in.
Very, very well put. Yeah. Yeah. And that's it, too. It's this perpetual state of debt is the American dream these days. You've got to stay in enough debt for another company to be able to take advantage and help you, quote unquote, help you out of that debt while at the same time creating more debt, you know, refinancing your home, doing all that. That way you can pay off your credit cards and then you can start putting more money on your credit cards.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It's something that I guess maybe as you get older, you start thinking about those things. Hopefully you do. Otherwise, I don't know where you're going to be, but you do start thinking about those things because when you're in your 20s, you're not thinking a whole lot about retirement. You're not thinking a whole lot. You're thinking about the weekend, the next party, the next girl that you know, all those different things. As you get older, that's when you start to realize, okay, this is getting, there's no reason for a lot of this stuff. And I think if people realize that a little bit more and started sort of getting away from that, pulling themselves away from the machine, it'd be a completely different story, but not happening. It's too easy, too convenient these days. Everything is convenient.
I think that's true prepping. As I think about three-dimensional prepping, and I think about, because again, for me, it started with a little bit of meat and a little bit of ammo and, you know, some Israeli bandages and a bag, right? I mean, that's where it starts, I think, for a lot of people, to now playing three-dimensional prepping, you know, and trying to understand the system and what stroke it has over me. And you know, and again, I look at it so different now. I wish I could go back to my 30s and know what I know now, because my, you know, it'd be totally, totally different. But I would encourage everybody to start playing three-dimensional prepping.
Yeah. And that's interesting too, because I didn't have it in my notes, but I was going to ask, because you are, and maybe I did on the last show, like I said, I don't remember, but you are so into the homesteading thing that, and with me, prepping has, I remember when I first got into it, and prepping is this definable thing when you first start getting into preparedness, and it's, I got to have the bug out bag. I got to have the long-term food. I got to have this, I got to have that. And then, you know, then I'm on the right track. And now once you do it 5-10 years, you start to get more towards the self-sufficiency aspect of it, that side of it. Then you start realizing that some of that other stuff, while it's cool, not the most, it's not going to make the biggest impact. The whole bugging out thing. That everybody in, I'll do a video on bugging out. I get 10 times more views than when I talk about mental stuff.
Yeah.
Because people love that crap.
Yeah.
But when you, as you start doing this longer, you start to understand that there are more important things. There are things that I need to do that it's maybe the bomb doesn't drop, but something else happens that, you know, I'm not going to be able to pay rent next month, or I'm not going to be able to pay mortgage next month or the next 3 months.
Yep.
Things like that happen. That's when you start, you know, it's good to know all that stuff, but at the same time, it evolves. Your idea of preparedness evolves. And that's what I was going to ask you is, like, when people say prepping to you, is it something that, how do I say this without making it sound like you hate the term prepping? Is it something that you sort of steer away from the whole, you know, some of these websites are geared towards the buyout bags and things like that. When somebody says prepping to you, what are your thoughts on that? I suppose, I don't know how to exactly put this. I hope you understood that.
Yeah, I do. I understand. You know, prepping is such a gigantic word. And I think most people look at it as such a small word, but it's really, really very, very big. You know, if you're successful as a prepper, you're prepping for what happens 10 years from now, whether it's good or bad. Mm-hmm. I think if you're preparing, you know, why do we have health insurance? Because we're preparing in case something went bad, right? I mean, so prepping is, to me, a gigantic word. Society has us convinced that the only prepping we should do is paying insurance premiums and that they'll take care of all of our problems. So to me, it's changed so much. It's no longer about how much I can store. That's a small piece of it, right? I have a nice big storage room and I have those things, but to me, it's more about regenerative and how can I continue to create and how can I do for myself? How can I make it where I don't have to ask permission anymore? Mm-hmm. That's what I'm prepping for. So I'm a permission prepper. I don't want to ask permission for electricity. I don't want to ask permission from anybody. You know, and now there's some things you're never going to get away from, taxes. I have not figured out how to not pay property tax yet. I would love to, but I haven't figured that one out.
Without going to jail, you mean?
Yeah, I'm not going to jail, right? I'm not going to go bear arms. I'm not doing those kinds of things, you know? I'm going to ignore them like they don't matter. I'm going to create parallel and counter economy. I'm going to create community where we can work together. You know, the Amish, and I, before I get on a big financial tangent, you know, I come from the financial world, but the Amish, you know, they typically go 6 or 7 transactions inside their community before the dollar leaves their community. And this is really important, because the federal government now gets 100% of your money back in 4 transactions. So the more that I can do inside of my community, the more value everything has in it. And so I'm playing three-dimensional prepping, not so much, I guess it's not totally fair, because I still buy Band-Aids. I still buy bullets. I still buy those things, but nowhere near like what I used to do. You know, now I'm way more focused on fighting that bigger picture from a prepping perspective. But I don't hate the term, just so I tell you. The term's fine.
Yeah. Well, and I think I don't think it's even possible to be 100% self-sufficient. I don't know that it ever really was possible to be 100% self-sufficient. Because like you said, you do need those certain things that you just can't make. Unless you're going to defend your property with a homemade slingshot. Yeah. Something like that. I mean, you're going to have to. Yeah, there are things that you're going to need. from whether that's other people or whatever. So yeah, I don't think you'll ever be 100%. Nobody will ever be 100% self-sufficient, but there is, it is this sort of nebulous thing, that the whole prepping thing, because it means something different to everybody. And preparedness could be the FEMA definition of preparedness up to, you know, I think once you get to a point where it goes past preparedness and you're prepping or you're homesteading. So, you know, once you got, you know, a few months worth of food, or you've taken steps like you've taken, I think you've passed the preparedness threshold, that, you know, the reading the FEMA website, and you're moving further down the line. But I don't think it really matters what you call it. Just as long as you're doing something to sort of move in that direction. And it's no longer, maybe it used to be in the 50s about saving up for retirement and doing things like that. And, you know, living with the white picket fence and drinking martinis in the backyard, whatever. Maybe, yeah. Those days are gone. Yeah. These days, I think there's this dark cloud hanging over everything. And back then, sure, there was Russia and, you know, the yeah. duck and cover crap. But these days it seems like and I don't want to say that retirement is pointless. Saving for retirement is pointless, because I don't think it is. But there's this dark cloud where it seems like something could happen and just wipe everything out at a moment's notice. And then we are sort of left holding the bag. So retirement, saving for retirement, investing means something totally different to me than what they did, you know, 10, you know, 50 years ago, something yep. like that. And I think it should for a lot of Americans. If you're investing in the market, that's just like going to Vegas to me. I don't know. Maybe there's, you know more than me. You've been in that side of the aisle. I just see it. But man, that just seems like I would lose my ass doing something like that. You did quite well though, didn't you?
I did. I did very well.
Yeah. See, you know how to play the game.
yeah, but I learned very quick what it was. It didn't take me very long. And I know you know my story, and I went through this big debacle and all of that stuff. But I can tell you, from someone who spent 23 years in the financial world running companies that, you know, one was $400 million, one was $150 million, you know, all this stuff went on. I have no money in the market today. I can tell you that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Good to know. I'm not a financial advisor. I'm not giving you financial advice. You should seek a professional. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. 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 Speaking of that, we hear all the time in preparedness about investing in gold and silver and doing things like that. And again, this is one of those things where it really is dependent on your situation, what you do. So this is not, like you just said, this is not advice. This is not telling you what to do. But I do want to get your thoughts on, I know gold is a little bit, a lot harder to invest in for a majority of people, whereas silver can be done over time and things like that. What are your thoughts on the investing in precious metals, the investing in general, as far as preparedness is concerned? Is it something that's going to be, you know, useful in a disaster situation, whether that's a large scale crisis or whatever it is? Gold, I don't see that being very useful, but what are your thoughts on the whole investing, the investing thing in general?
Yeah, I think the first thing is, and you know, you and I talked about this before we went live today, that you got to understand where you're on the chessboard, because for everybody, it's different. I could tell you, if I had an extra $500,000 today to put somewhere, I wouldn't buy gold or silver. I just wouldn't. I would buy land. That's just what I would do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. For me. But people who live in urban areas, people who can't get to that because of work reasons, family reasons, whatever it is, I think a great place to store your wealth is in gold and silver. But to understand that, don't look at it as anything more than that. It's a place to store your wealth. Yeah. That's it. It's not, if you're buying it to make money on it, I think you're going to be fooled, and I think you're going to be left holding the bag. I mean, the government can come in and regulate it. They've been suppressing the prices of it for a long, long time. They're continuing to suppress the prices of it. But if what you're looking for is a place to store your wealth, I think it's a good buy. I own both. But again, I want to stress that if I had an extra $500,000 or $250,000 or $100,000 that I wanted to spend, I'd be putting it in land personally.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a very good point, because I sort of think of it the same way. If you are looking at a situation where maybe it's hyperinflation or whatever, it's going to be something that, yes, sure, you can use it, but the value is not going to be there for you. So, I mean, granted, it like you said, storing your wealth, it's going to hold its value more than the dollar is or whatever they come up with next. But I think as far as investing, you talked about land. I think investing in preparedness, whether that is your food storage, whether that is your even skills, that's things that don't cost money. I think those types of investments are also important as well. If you want to do the gold and silver, we've got silver. I don't do a whole lot of gold because the sticker shock of it is a little much. And I think somebody said in the chat too, you can do fractional. Jules said, pull this up. He said, you can get golden fractionals. That's what I do. I just don't do much of that. But at the same time, it's frustrating when I see inflation and I see things like that. And I want to take as much out of the actual dollar bill, the fiat currency, as I possibly can, because I know that in a year, even just a year from now, I mean, how much is that going to, is the value of that going to go down compared to the value of gold? Even if they, keep manipulating it, it's going to at least stay steady. You know, the dollar isn't going to do that. So it is one of those, it's that chess game like you talked about. You need to figure out your situation and what you can do, or maybe you just don't have enough money and it doesn't matter because the money doesn't stay in the bank long enough for you to lose it.
But I can tell you, I try to stay out of cash the best I can. I have a theory in my life, and that's I want to be asset rich and income poor. I want to live a McDonald's life, and that means that, you know, I'm fighting the backside money argument. You know, and one of these days, I'm happy to do another video. We can talk about backside versus frontside money and the way that, you know, I go hammer it. But I can pay all of my bills now today in life on $700 a month because I have put my life in a situation where I don't have a lot of need. And in fact, most of that $700 I can take off. I got the internet. I don't need it. I could cancel my cell phone, right? You could get rid of some of those kinds of things. So
the luxuries, yeah.
Yeah. So this is a backside argument, a backside money argument, meaning that, you know, when you talk about going into retirement, I plan for retirement, but I plan different than other people. I want to have money sitting there for retirement, but I'm also going to enter retirement age with no debt, with no bills, with providing my own energy, providing my own water, providing my own sewer, providing my own food or a good chunk of it. Right. So that's a backside money argument. But yeah, I mean, I think I would just tell people, you know, as far as what you were talking about earlier about investing and prepping, I think is also really, really important. It is insane to me that someone would have a bunch of money in a 401k and be asking the government for their electricity. I think it's insane that somebody would have a bunch of money in a 401k and have to beg permission for a glass of water.
Yeah.
I think it's insanity. I would never do it again. And I did it. I'm guilty. I did it one time in my life. I did it. Never again.
Yeah, I think that's it also goes to my lack of trust in the systems and how it's been manipulated and screwed with and all the way back to when the Fed was created and all that stuff, that it just seems like this bubble, this huge bubble that's about to burst. And this goes back to what we were talking about at the beginning of the show with World War III. And if it's a system that they see, there is no fixing anymore. There is no manipulating anymore. There are no band-aids to be put on this thing. Yep. And that's what they need. Then it all falls apart. And there's going to be a lot of people that lose their ass in a situation like that. If you go the route like you have and you or a lot of preppers are trying to do, at least you're padding that fall, I suppose. Right. Yeah, and with you, there is no fall, you're getting there.
Right. There's still things. I don't make oil filters. I don't make gasoline.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm still dependent on the system for some things. But ask any general in the world today how many fronts he wants to fight a battles on. He'll tell you one. Why? Yeah. Because he don't want to divide his resources. Right. So I'm just trying to get my fronts I'm fighting smaller. That's all I'm doing. It's a game. We call it the ungovernable score. We actually built a calculator to help so we could play the game. And but even those people who were in the city, which is what I was going to say, is you guys, this is fine. There are ways, maybe one day we could do a show of that. How do people in the city prepare like this? Because you can absolutely do it. You can absolutely find those farmer alliances. You can absolutely find the farmer's market. You can find that gray market for the things that you need. Not quite black market, but, you know, gray market. But you can absolutely do it. Don't be discouraged. You can do it.
Yeah. Yeah. See, and something I sort of waver on back and forth, because you've got the criminal element. The more population you have, the more that is going to be an issue. But at the same time, I don't necessarily think it's a death sentence to be inside a city.
Mm-hmm. I don't either.
Whereas if you tried to leave that city and then you become a refugee, is that better?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think there, if you are in the city, you're already seeing the crime. You already know how to sort of handle that situation.
Yeah.
And we talked about how this reminds me of what Selko had. I did an interview with him a while back, and he went through the Balkan Wars in the Balkans, and where they basically had his city under siege for, I think, his a year. His little course is called A Year in Hell. So I assume it was about a year. But he talked about how things went on inside that little that the place that was under siege. I don't think it would be that bad in a city type environment. But at the same time, you would have those elements. I don't think you would have warlords and things like that. But you would have these groups that are trying to take advantage. So if there was food that was trying to get delivered, sort of like in Ukraine, where they talk about other countries are bringing in food, there would be people that are going to grab those up and they're going to charge you outrageous damn prices for them. But it doesn't mean it's you know, it's all over. It can be done, and you got to do what you can do anyway. So,
well, and I think you got to put that into perspective too. I mean, if you're talking about a warlord who takes your property without asking, who, you know, poisons you, for example, who manipulates to you, who governs you. We have that now. What's the difference?
Yeah, it's called the government.
That's what I'm saying. You're already serving the warlord. I would rather take my chances on me.
Yeah, exactly. It just goes to show. I mean, we talk about all of this stuff all the time, and there are 150 different scenarios and 150 things that could go on. And a lot of them we do need to pay attention to. There are some that, yes, we need to understand them, but still be realistic about what the potential is. And these days it's almost impossible to narrow it down to what is going to happen. We've talked about World War III a couple of times tonight, which is a probability. You talk about the things that are going on inside this country and the economy and all sorts of different things. The price of food just getting to the point where it's outrageous and people just accept it. It's that frog in a boiling pot of water thing. We get used to $2 a gallon of gas. Then it goes up to $4. And then when it goes back down $3, we're like, hey, gas went down. And that's just how they completely play the game. But there's just a lot of things that you talked about. The general wants to fight a battle on one front. We're looking at 13 right now.
We can still take it to one front to some degree. What I mean by that is, okay, so let's take all of the shit hits the fan situations and put them in one bucket. What are the commonalities in all of them? I can tell you there's some of them, right? The grid.
Yeah.
No matter what you face there, the chances are you're not going to have the grid. The second thing is food shortages, right? Chances are, right, you're not going to have that. The other thing is you could talk about depression, people losing their jobs. So now you have food insecurities. There's three or four things you can do that those three or four things will put you in miles ahead of everybody else, no matter what happens.
Yeah. Yeah. Water as well. Water is one that a lot of people don't think about. Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah.
And those will be those things you just talked about right there will be the things that cause most of the issues down the line. So it won't be the armed conflict or whatever that is going to be that major issue. It's going to be, I always talk about people are the X factor. People are going to decide how bad that crappy situation, how much worse it gets. Because if it is people without food, I guarantee you things are going to start going down. People don't do well when they're not fed. Keep them fat and happy like Americans, not much gets said. But as soon as they can't eat, things start happening. Water, all of those things, very good points.
One of the reasons I really appreciate your show is because you talk about the mental side of it. Because to me, the mental side of it's 90% of it. And so I'm glad that you talk about that. So that's the other thing I would add to that whole equation is the mental side of it. And embrace the suck every day. Go make it hard. It's fine. Absolutely fine. And I think you get through it fine.
Do those things that are going to make the biggest impact. Yeah. And that's what I think. And a lot of that is the mental stuff. A lot of that is thinking about these situations, thinking about it rationally, how you are going to put yourself in a position to thrive through whatever, you know, name your crisis. I mean, if you're doing it right, it really shouldn't matter. The initial event, yes, that is going to matter. But after that, everything that's going on after that, I think if you're doing it right or if you're going in the right direction, that gets minimized a bit as far as how you're going to do. And that goes into having the food, having the water. You mentioned the grid. You talked about you could do without your phone and do without the internet. That it would be very hard to go without electricity.
Oh, yeah. It might be more important than water in today's world. It might be.
It could be.
I think
all the different things that we as preppers or just as people, we have all these different tools that make our lives so much easier, from a power drill, sorts of different things that make our lives so much easier. Having the ability, we have the tools, we have the technology, so we might as well use it. And to be able to use it, we need to be able, whether you're talking about solar, whatever you're talking about, you mentioned the four areas that are going to make it the biggest impact. And I absolutely think that is one of them. Whether you're talking about a simple power outage, a couple days, to something, you know, the people coming across the border, maybe there's fighting aged men that are going to sabotage substations or things like that. Something that could be months down the line. If you've got that stuff figured out as much as possible, you're going to be better off.
Yep.
With that said, you got to be able to protect that stuff as well, which all goes back to community. And it's not the Hollywood story where, they get to write the script, right? They get to figure out what the ending is going to be. And if they don't like that, they scrap it and send it back to the writer. Let's write a different ending. Yeah. We don't have that luxury. So the more we can do, the more we can prepare, the more we can sort of hedge our bets, I think the better off we're going to be. Yeah.
You know, most movies show, as I mentioned earlier, you know, six people grabbing this and going to this bug out location and, you know, red dawning life or whatever. But, you know, I live in a big community, and it's more of an intentional neighborhood than an intentional community, because we all own our own land and all that. But anyway, we shoot, we go to the range. I have my own range. You know, we have all of these things, but I spend way more time fixing fence. I spend way more time processing the fruit harvest or, you know, slaughtering a pig or whatever happens to be on the agenda than we do that science fiction Mad Max things that go on. And I think it would be true in the event of the collapse or in the event of the, you know, the greatest depression. You'll spend more of your time harvesting and more of your time doing those kinds of things than you will running through the desert, you know, with a guy strapped to the front of your truck.
Yeah, that's stuff that doesn't make the headlines, right? If you don't do it, it's still going to be there, and it's going to be on top of the other thing you didn't do until you're moving back into an apartment in the middle of the city. Screw it.
Yeah, I'm done. This is too much. Yeah.
Which if you did something like that, you would absolutely hate yourself and be like, what the hell did I just do?
Yeah, I could never go back. You know, it's like when you work for somebody and you punch a time clock and then all of a sudden you become self-employed, you'll never go back to a time clock.
Yeah.
Well, it works the same way when you take that step from prepping to homesteading or prepping to freesteading or whatever that is, right? Whatever that jump is there, it's hard to turn and go back the other way. Because now, dude, I don't even know what it's like to get an electric bill. I have no idea. You know, I don't know what it's like to have a water bill. I don't know. I don't do any of those things. We do it all for ourselves. Yeah, I got to mess with it. And there's times that it breaks and I got to go fix it and those things. But I don't know that I could ever go back.
Yeah. Bessie said, I need my internet to order my HelloFresh. That's the American way right there. I know she's being sarcastic.
Yeah.
it's sort of like moving from, I grew up in the suburbs out here in Littleton in Colorado, and it's sort of like moving to a rural area. It's a culture shock at first, and this is very small scale as compared to what you're talking about, but it's sort of a culture shock at first. But I could not imagine living downtown anywhere USA. I just couldn't. Even the suburbs, that would be a little bit more tolerable. But if I can look out my window and see some guy taking a dump in his toilet from 10 feet away, that's too damn close. But another thing, and I'm sure you've experienced this too, is you move out to a rural area And you want a little bit more rural area. You want a little bit more. You want a little bit more land. You want a little bit. You can do certain things, but you can't quite do this. I want to be able to go in my backyard and shoot. I can't quite do that yet.
Yeah.
So that's one of the, you know, the goals. And you sort of just kind of go that route. And the more you do that, the more they hate you because you're getting, you're not sucking the tit anymore.
Yeah. You know, people ask me all the time things like, well, Tag, what would you do if World War III started tomorrow or a nuke went off or whatever? And I always joke, I'm saying, make popcorn. But there's some truth really in it because I don't really have to leave my farm very much. You know, I mean, there's going to come a time where I'm out of salt or I'm out of something, but so you'd have to go. But I think regardless of where you're at, I'm telling you, you can make a difference and you can be, I don't even want to use the word prepared. You can be accountable for yourself and accountable to yourself. Right. You can do it absolutely anywhere. And we need to do a show sometime on how people in the city can do that because there's a million ways.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll tell you what, I'll be up whenever you want. I'll be on your show and we can talk about whatever you want. Justin Time said, I'd rather poop in an outhouse than live in a big city.
Amen.
Yeah, that is, you know what? That is a strange analogy, but it is absolutely the perfect analogy because I'd rather take my 5-gallon bucket and have to go outside and take a dump than have to, you know, live in some apartment building, share a laundry room, do all those types of things or go to a laundromat. I get anxious when I have to go into a city and it doesn't happen very often. But every once in a while, we'll have to go every few years or so nowadays. But you have to go. And the more people, the more anxious I get, the more anxiety that builds up because I don't trust them.
No, and you shouldn't.
Yeah.
You see all the pictures of, you know, planes flying over, dumping mosquitoes out or spraying over New York that's going on this week for West Nile or just the stuff going into Maui or man, I don't trust the talk about the next pandemic. I ain't going. No.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Nope.
All right, man. Well, I think we are going to get out of here tonight. Everyone in the chat, appreciate y'all joining in. Whenever you're looking for a guest, hit me up. I'll be on your show. Well, I guess it's both shows regardless of what we do, but you can schedule it on your channel and I'll join you. You can be the one writing up the bullet points and stuff.
I'll do that. Let's think about it though. Maybe we'll do things people in the city can do to live free and how to make the connections outside of the city or how to do these things that give people choices. And I'll think about it for a couple of weeks and I'll contact you.
Yeah, that's a very good idea. Yeah. Before we get out of here, for my audience, just let them know one more time where they can find you, what you're doing, and whatever information you think you need that everybody would find important.
Yeah, so the YouTube channel is Life Done Free, and that's because my goal is to go live a life done free. So that's that. I also run the social media platform freesteading.com, which is basically a website designed to connect and build community. And there's every 50 state pages is in there. You can go in there. If you're in Texas, there'll be 400 people in there talking. It's free, cost you nothing. And in fact, when you register, I don't even ask you for any information other than an email address because I have to have it to send you the stuff. Beyond that, that's about it. Other than I'm going to speak at the Self-Reliance Festival here in 2 weeks in Tennessee, then the Kentucky Sustainable Living Conference after the week after that, Midwest Preparedness Project next week. So I hope to see somebody there.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, real quick, Ghetto in the chat. And I don't know, this is from your channel. Does Ghetto have a YouTube channel?
Yes, he does.
Would you want to be part of the show?
And he would be a great one to be in that. Because that's his background.
Yeah, let's do the three of us then. That would be fun. Last time we did Grumpy Acres, that was a blast. We didn't step on each other too much, and it worked out pretty well.
Yeah, Ghetto, this is a great idea. Thanks for speaking up. I think you'd be perfect at that.
I can't figure out how to hide comment. I was like, where's the button? All right. Well, that sounds like I'm game. That sounds like it would be a blast. At any rate, we are going to get out of here. Lisa's in the chat, DIY Diva. Everyone else, appreciate y'all joining in today. Had a really good time. I figured we would. We always have the last couple of times we've done shows. It's always really good information. And I'm sure my audience absolutely loves it as well. So we will definitely have to do it again. I know I'm going to be on with Grumpy as soon as he gets done with some of his things in a little bit. So, with that, everyone, Tag, stick around a little bit after the show. And then everyone else, take care and prepare. We'll talk to you all later.